Welcome to the Myth, Legend, and Lore podcast. Daughter of Norna Guest. An adaptation of the translation by Nora Kershaw, found in Stories and Ballads of the Far Past, imprinted in 1921. The story goes, when King Olaf Tryggvason was living at Trondheim, it chanced a man came to him late in the day, and with great respect, asked to speak with him. The king welcomed the man and asked the stranger who he was. The man said that his name was Guest. The king answered, "You shall be a guest here, whatever you are called." Guest said, "I have told you my name truly, sire. I will gladly receive your hospitality, if I may." The king replied that he could have it readily, but since the day was far spent, the king would not enter into conversation with his guest, for soon he was going to evening prayer at sunset, then to dinner, and then to bed, to sleep. Now, on that same night, while all other men were in the hall asleep, King Olaf Tryggvason was lying awake in his bed, and saying his prayers. It was at this moment the king noticed that an elf or spirit of some kind had entered the hall, though all the doors were locked. He made his way past the beds of the men who were asleep there, one after another, and at last reached the bed of a man at the far end. The elf stopped and said, "An empty house, and a mighty strong bolt on the door. People say that the king is the wisest of men. If he were as clever in things of this kind, as they say, he would not sleep so soundly." After that he vanished through the door, locked as it was. Early the next morning, the king sent his servant to find out who had occupied that particular bed overnight, and it was proved to have been none other than the stranger. The king ordered him to be summoned before him, and asked him whose son he was. He answered, "My father's name was Torth. He was a Dane, and was called the Contentious, and lived at a palace called Groning in Denmark." "Then you are a well-set-up man," said the king. Guest was bold of speech and bigger in build than most men. He looked strong, but was somewhat advanced in years. He asked the king if he might stay for a while in his retinue. The king asked if he were baptized. Guest said that he had been prime signed but not baptized. The king said that he was free to remain in his retinue, but added, "You will not remain long unbaptized with me." The reason for the elf's remark about the bolt was that Guest had crossed himself that evening like other men, but in reality he was still a heathen. The king said, "Can you do anything in the way of sport or music?" Guest replied that he could play the harp and tell stories which people enjoyed. The king then said, "King Svein has no right to let unbaptized men leave his kingdom and wander about from one country to another." Guest replied, "You must not blame the king of the Danes for this, for it is a long time since I left Denmark. In fact, it was a long time before the Emperor Otto burnt the Danework, and forced King Harald Gormson and Earl Hakon, the heathen, to become Christians. The king questioned Guest about many things, and he always gave him good and intelligent answers. Men say that was in the third year of King Olaf's reign that Guest came to him. In this year, also there came to him two men called Grimm, who were sent by Guthmund from Glaesvellir. As a gift from Guthmund, they brought to the king two horns which were also called Grimm. They also had some further business with the king, which we will return to later. As for Guest, he remained with the king and had a place at the far end of the visitors' seats. He was a man of breeding and had good manners, was well liked, and much respected by everyone. It was a little before Yule when Ulf the Red and his following returned home. He had been engaged on the king's business all summer, for he had been appointed to guard the coasts of the bay against Danish raids. He never failed to be with King Olaf at midwinter. Ulf had many fine treasures to bring the king, which he had got during the summer, and one gold ring in particular, which was called Nithuth. It was welded together in 7 places, and each piece had a different colour. It was made of far finer gold than rings usually are. This ring had been given to Ulf by a landowner called Lothmund, and before that, it had belonged to King Half, from whom the Halfsrekkr take their name. The ring had come to them as forced tribute from King Halfdan Ilfling. Lothmund had asked Ulf in return for it that he would guard his home with the support of King Olaf, and Ulf had promised to do so. Now, King Olaf was keeping Yule in magnificent style at his court in Trondheim, and it was on the 8th day of Yule that Ulf gave him the gold ring Nithuth. The king thanked Ulf for the gift, so too did he thank Ulf for faithful service, which he had constantly rendered him. The ring was passed between the men as they drank. As each man showed it to his neighbour, they thought they had never seen such fine gold as that of which the ring was made. At last it came to the table where Guest sat. He looked at the ring and handed it back on the palm of his hand, the hand in which he had been holding his drinking horn. He was not much impressed with the treasure, and made no remarks about it, but went on jesting with his companions. A serving man was pouring out drink at the end of the guest table. "Do you not like the ring?" he asked. The men replied, "We all like it very much except the newcomer. He can't see anything in it, but we think he can't appreciate it simply because he doesn't care for things of this kind." The serving man went up the hall to the king and told him exactly what the guests had said, adding that the newcomer had taken little note of the treasure, valuable as it was, when it was shown to him. Then the king remarked, "The newcomer probably knows much more than you think. He must come to me in the morning and tell me a story." Now, as Guest and the other visitors at the farthest table were talking among themselves, they asked the newcomer where he had seen a better ring, or even one as good as this. "Since you evidently think it strange," said Guest, "that I make so little of it, I may say that I have certainly seen gold which is in no way inferior, but actually better." The king's men laughed heartily, and said that that promised good sport, adding, "Will you agree to wager with us that you have seen gold as good as this, and prove it? We will stake 4 marks in current coin against your knife and belt, and the king shall decide who is in the right." Then Guest said, "I will neither be made a laughing stock for you, nor fail to keep the wager which you offer, and I will certainly lay a wager with you on the spot, and stake exactly what you have suggested, and the king shall judge who is in the right." Then they stopped talking, and Guest took his harp and played it well, far into the evening, so that it was a joy to all who heard him. What he rendered best was the harping of Gunnar, and last of all, he played the ancient wiles of Guthrun, neither of which they had heard before. And after that, they went to sleep for the night. In the morning, The king rose early and heard mass. After that, he went to breakfast with his retinue. And when he had taken his place in the high seat, the guests came up to him, and Guest was with them. And they told him all about their agreement and the wager which they had made. "I am not much taken with your wager," replied the king. "Although it is your own money that you are staking, I suspect that the drink must have gone to your heads, and I think you would do well to give it up, especially if Guest agrees." "My wish," replied Guest, "is that the agreement should stand." "It looks to me, Guest," said the king, "as if it was my men rather than you, whose tongues have gotten them into trouble. But we shall soon put that to the test." After that, they left him and went to drink. And when the drinking tables were removed, the king summoned Guest and spoke to him as follows. "Now is the time for you to produce the gold if you have any, so that I can decide your wager." "As you will, sire," replied Guest. Then he felt in a pouch which he had with him, and took out of it a fob which he untied, and then handed something to the king. The king saw that it was a piece of saddle buckle, made of exceedingly fine gold. Then he bade him bring the ring Nithith, and when they did so, the king compared the ring and the piece of gold, and said, "I have no doubt whatever that the gold which Guest has shown us is the finer, and anyone who looks at it must think so too." Everybody agreed with the king. He decided the wager in Guest's favour, and the other guests came to the conclusion that they had made fools of themselves over the business. Then Guest said, "Take your money and keep it yourselves, for I don't need it. But don't make any more wagers with strangers, for you never know when you may hit upon someone who has both seen and heard more than you have. I thank you, sire, for your decision." Then the king said, "I want you to tell me where you got that gold from, which you carry about with you." Guest replied, "I am loath to tell you, because no one will believe what I have to say about it." "Let us hear it all the same," said the king, "for you promised before that you would tell us your story." "If I tell you the history of this piece of gold," replied Guest, "I expect you will want to hear the rest of my story along with it." "I expect that that is just what will happen," said the king. And so Guest began. "Then I will tell you how I once went south into the land of the Franks. I wanted to see for myself what sort of a prince Sigurd the son of Sigmund was, and discover if the reports which had reached me of his great beauty and courage were true. Nothing happened worth mentioning until I came to the land of the Franks and met King Hjalprek. He had a great court around him. Sigurd, the son of Sigmund, the son of Volsung and Hjordis, the daughter of Elimi, were there at that time. Sigmund had fallen in battle against the sons of Hunding, and Hjordis had married Ulf, the son of King Hjalprek. There Sigurd grew up together with all the other sons of King Sigmund. Among these were Sinfjotli and Helgi, who surpassed all men in strength and stature. Helgi slew King Hunding, thereby earning the name Hunding's Bani. The third son was called Hamund. Sigurd, however, outstripped all his brothers, and it is a well-known fact that he was the noblest of all warrior princes, and the very model of a king in heathen times. At that time, Regin, the son of Hreithmar, had also come to King Hjalprek. He was a dwarf in stature, but there was no one more cunning than he. He was a wise man, but malign and skilled in magic. Regin taught Sigurd many things and was devoted to him. He told him about his birth and his wondrous adventures. And when I had been there a little while, I entered Sigurd's service like many others. He was much admired because he was friendly and unassuming, and generous to all. It chanced one day that we came to Regan's house, and Sigurd was made welcome there. Then Regan spoke these verses. The son of Sigmund cometh to our hall, a valiant warrior. It must needs befall that I, less doughty and oppressed with age, shall fall a victim to his wolfish rage. But I will cherish Yngvi's valorous heir, since fate hath sent him hither to our care. Train him to be, in valor and in worth, the mightiest, the most famous prince on earth. At this time, Sigurd was constantly in Regan's company. Regan told him much about Fafnir, how he dwelt upon Nita Heath in the form of a serpent, and also of his wondrous size. Regan made for Sigurd a sword called Gram. It was so sharp that when he thrust it into the river Rhine, it cut in two a flock of wool, which he had dropped into the river, and which was drifting downstream, cutting it just as clean as it did to the water itself. Later on, Sigurd clove Regan's anvil with the sword. After that, Regan urged Sigurd to slay his brother Fafnir, and Sigurd recited this verse. The sons of Hunding would laugh loud and high, who shed the lifeblood of King Elimi. If that his grandson, Bolt, should more desire, rings of red gold than vengeance for his sire. After that, Sigurd made ready an expedition to attack the sons of Hunding, and King Hjalprik gave him many men and some warships. Hammond, Sigurd's brother, was with him on this venture, and so was Regan the dwarf. I was present too, and they called me Norna Guest. King Hjalprik had got to know me when he was in Denmark with Sigmund, the son of Volsung. At that time, Sigmund was married to Borkild, but they parted because Borkild killed Sinfjotli, the son of Sigmund, by poison. Then Sigmund went south to the land of the Franks and married Hjordis, the daughter of King Elimi. The sons of Hunding slew him, so Sigurd had both his father and his grandfather to avenge. Helgi, the son of Sigmund, who was called Hunding's Bani, was the brother of Sigurd, who was afterwards called Fafnisbani. Helgi, Sigurd's brother, had slain King Hunding and three of his sons, Eilf, Hervarth, and Hjorvarth, but Lingvi and his two remaining brothers, Alf and Hemming, escaped. They were exceedingly famous for exploits and accomplishments of every kind, but Lingvi surpassed all his brothers. They were very skilled in magic. They had reduced many petty kings to subjection, and slain many champions, and burnt many cities. They had worked the greatest havoc with their raids in Spain and in the land of the Franks. But at that time, the imperial power had not yet been transferred to the regions north of the Alps. The sons of Hunding had seized the realm which belonged to Sigurd in the land of the Franks, and they had very large forces there. Now I must tell you how Sigurd prepared for battle against the sons of Hunding. He had got together a large and well-armed host, and Regan was mighty man in the councils of the force. He had a sword which was called Rithil, and which he had forged himself. Sigurd asked Regan to lend him the sword. He did so, begging him to slay Fafnir when he should return from this adventure, and this Sigurd promised to do. After that, we sailed away south along the coast. Then we met with a great storm raised by witchcraft, and many believed that it had been stirred up by the sons of Hunding. After this, we hugged the shore somewhat more closely. And then we saw a man on a rocky promontory, which jutted out from the cliffs. He wore a green cloak and dark breeches, and he had high-laced boots on his feet, and carried a spear in his hand. The man addressed us in this way. What folk are ye who ride the sea king's steed, mounting the lofty billows and proceed, athwart the tossing main? Drenched is your sail, nor can your ships against the wind prevail. Regan replied, Hither we come with Sigurd o'er the foam, whom ocean breezes blow to our last home. Full soon the breakers, higher than the prow, will sink our ocean steeds. But who art thou? The man in the cloak replied, Nikar, the name men did for me employ, young Volsung, when I gave the raven joy of carnage. Call me either of the two, Fjolnir or Feng, but let me fare with you. Then we steered toward the land, and the wind fell immediately, and Sigurd bade the man to come on board. He did so, and a fair breeze sprang up. The man sat down at Sigurd's feet and was very friendly, asking if Sigurd would like to hear some advice from him. Sigurd said that he would, and added that he had an idea that Nikar could give people very helpful advice, if he were willing to turn it to their advantage. Then Sigurd said to the man in the cloak, O Nikar, since you know the destiny of gods and men, declare this unto me. Which are the omens that should most delight when swords are swinging and a man must fight? And Nikar replied, Many propitious signs, if men could know, appear when the swords are swinging to and fro. I hold a warrior as a trusty guide when a dark raven hovers at his side. I hold it too for a propitious sign, if men to make a journey should design, and coming out of doors see close at hand to gallant warriors in the pathway stand. And if you hear beneath the rowan tree a howling wolf, the sound spells luck to thee, and luck shall be helmed warriors bring to thee, if thou such warriors art first to see. Facing the sinking and late shining light of the moon's sister, warriors should not fight. Victory is theirs, who eager for the fray can clearly see to order their array. I hold it no occasion for delight when a man stumbles as he goes to fight. For guileful spirits dog him on his way with mischief-bearing looks throughout the fray. A man of wisdom, as each day goes past, washes and combs his hair and breaks his fast. He knows not where by evening he may be. Stumbling is bad luck, boding ill to thee. After that, we sailed southwards along the coast of Holstein and to the east of Friesland, and there we landed. The sons of Hunding heard at once of our expedition and gathered an army, and soon they had a larger force than we had, and when we encountered them there was a great battle. Lingvi was the most valiant of the brothers in every onset, though they all fought bravely. Sigurd's attack was so fierce that everyone shrank before him when they saw that they were threatened by the sword Gram. There was no need to reproach Sigurd with lack of courage, and when he and Lingvi met, they exchanged many blows and fought with the greatest valour. Then there was a lull in the battle, where people turned to watch the single combat. For a long time, neither of them was able to inflict a wound on the other. So skilled in arms were they. Then Lingvi's brothers made a fierce attack and slew many of our men while others took to flight. Then Hammund, Sigurd's brother, rushed to meet them, and I joined him, and then there was another encounter. The end of the affair between Sigurd and Lingvi was that Sigurd made him prisoner and had him fettered. And when Sigurd joined us, matters very soon changed. Then the sons of Hunding fell, and all their host. But the night was coming on, and when day dawned, Nikar had vanished, and he was never seen again. We came to the conclusion that in reality, it must have been Odin. A discussion then took place as to what death Lingvi should suffer. Regin counselled that the blood eagle should be carved on his back. Then I handed to Regin his sword, and with it he carved Lingvi's back till he had severed the ribs from the spine, and then he drew out the lungs. Thus died Lingvi with great courage. Then Regin said, Full seldom has a bolder warrior reddened the earth than Sigmund's murderer. Hugin he feasted, now with biting sword, the bloody eagle on his back is scored. Great spoil was taken there. Sigurd's sailors got the whole of it, because he would not take any himself. The clothes and weapons taken were worth much gold. Afterwards, Sigurd slew Fafnir, and Regan also, because Regan had intended to deal treacherously with him. Sigurd took Fafnir's gold and rode away with it, and from that time on he was called Fafnisbani. After that he rode up to Hinderheath, where he found Brynhild. What passed between them is told in the story of Sigurd Fafnisbani. Later, Sigurd married Guthrun, the daughter of King Giuki, and then stayed for a while with his brothers-in-law, the sons of Giuki. I returned to the north with Sigurd and was with him in Denmark. And I was also with him when Sigurd Thring sent his brothers-in-law, the sons of Gandalf, to Gunnar and Hogni, the sons of Giuki, and demanded that they should pay him tribute, threatening them with invasion in case they refused. They decided to defend their country. Thereupon Gandalf's sons challenged the sons of Giuki to a pitched battle on the frontier, and then returned home. But the sons of Giuki asked Sigurd Fafnisbani to go to battle with them. He agreed to do so. I was still with Sigurd at that time. We sailed northwards along the coast of Holstein and landed at a place called Jöranamotha. Not far from the landing place, hazelwood poles had been set up to mark where the fight was to take place. Then we saw many ships sailing from the north under the command of the sons of Gandalf. Then the two hosts charged one another fiercely. Sigurd Thring was not there, because he had to defend his own land, Sweden, against the inroads of the Kurir and the Kvenir. Sigurd was a very old man at that time. Then the forces came into collision, and there was a great battle and much slaughter. The sons of Gandalf fought bravely, for they were exceptionally big and strong. In that host there appeared a large, strong man, who made much slaughter of men and horses, that no one could withstand him, for he was more like a giant than a man. Gunnar bade Sigurd go and attack the scoundrel, adding that as things were, there would be no success. So Sigurd made ready to encounter the mighty man. Some others went with him, but most of them were far from eager. We quickly came upon the mighty man, and Sigurd asked him his name and whence he came. He said his name was Starkath, the son of Storvik, and that he had come from the north, from Fenring in Norway. Sigurd said that he had heard reports of him, and generally little to his credit, adding that no mercy ought to be shown towards such people as this. Starkath said, "Who is this man who casts insults in my teeth?" And Sigurd told him who he was. Starkath said, "Are you called Fafnisbani?" And Sigurd said that he was. Then Starkath sought to escape, but Sigurd pursued him and swung aloft the sword Gram and struck him on the jaw with the hilt so hard the two molars fell out of his mouth. It was a stunning blow. Then Sigurd bade the cur to take himself off, and Starkath went away, and I picked up one of the teeth and carried it off with me. It is now used on a bell rope at Lund in Denmark, and weighs 7 ounces, and people go there and look at it as a curiosity. As soon as Starkath had run away, the sons of Gandalf took to flight, and we captured great plunder. After that, Sigurd went home to his realm and remained there for a while. A short time later, we heard that Starkath had committed a foul murder, slaying King Ali in his bath. It chanced one day that Sigurd Fafnisbani was riding to some gathering or other. He rode into a muddy pool, and his horse Grani leapt up so wildly that his saddle girth burst asunder, and the buckle fell to the ground. And when I saw where it lay shining in the mud, I picked it up and handed it to Sigurd, but he said that I might keep it. It was that very piece of gold you were looking at a short time ago. Then Sigurd got down from his horse, and I rubbed down and washed the mud off of it, and pulled a lock of hair out of its tail, as proof of its great size. Gest then showed the lock, and it was 7 ells long. King Olaf said,
"I think your stories are very entertaining."
All there praised his stories and his talent. Then the king wanted him to tell them much more about the adventures he had met on his travels. So Gest told them many amusing stories till late in the evening. It was then time to go to bed. The next morning, the king sent for Gest, wanting to talk to him still further. The king said,
"I can't quite make out your age, how you can be old enough to have been present when these events took place. You will have to tell another story, so as to make us better acquainted with things of this kind."
Gest replied,
"I suspected before that you would want to hear another of my tales, if I told you what had happened about the gold."
"You must certainly tell me more," replied the king.
"I must tell you more then," Gest began, "that I went north to Denmark, and there I settled down on my estate, for my father had died a short time before, and a little later I heard of the death of Sigurd and the sons of Giuki, and I felt that that was news indeed."
"What was the cause of Sigurd's death?"
asked the king. The guest replied,
"It is generally believed that Guthorm, the son of Giuki, ran a sword through him while he was asleep in bed with Guthrun. On the other hand, Germans say that Sigurd was slain out in the forest. In the Guthrunarritha, again it is stated that Sigurd and the sons of Giuki had ridden to a gathering and that they then slew him. But one thing is agreed by all, that they set on him when he was down and off his guard, and that they were guilty of gross treachery towards him."
Then one of the retinue asked,
"How did Brynhild behave then?"
Gest answered,
"Brynhild then slew 7 of her slaves and 5 handmaidens, and ran herself through with a sword, commanding that she should be taken to the pyre along with these people, and burned beside Sigurd. This was done, one pile being made for Sigurd, and another for Brynhild. He was burned first, and then her. She was taken in a chariot with a canopy of velvet and silk, which was all ablaze with gold, and thus she was burned."
Then Gest was asked if Brynhild had chanted a lay after she was dead. He replied that she had, and then they asked him to recite it, if they could. Gest said,
"As Brynhild was being driven to the pyre on the way to hell, she was brought near some cliffs where an ogress dwelt. The ogress was standing outside her cave, and wore a skin kirtle, and was of a blackish hue. She carried long bundles of sticks in her hand, and cried, 'This will I contribute to your burning, Brynhild. It would have been better for you if you had been burned while you were still alive. You are guilty of getting such a splendid man as Sigurd Fafnir's Bani slain. I was always friendly to him, and therefore I shall attack you in a reproachful song, which will make you hated by everybody who hears what you have done.' After that, Brynhild and the ogress chanted to one another. This is what the ogress sang: 'Thou shalt not be suffered to pass through my courts with their pillars of stone in my mansion drear. Better far wert thou busied at home with thy needle. Not thine is the husband thou followest here. Inconstant soul, why comest thou hither? From the land of Romans, why visitest thou me? Full many a wolf hast thou made partaker of the lifeblood of men who were butchered by thee.' Then cried Brynhild, 'And braid me no more from thy rock-bound dwelling, for battles I fought in the days of old. Thou wilt not be deemed to be nobler of nature than I, wheresoever our story is told.' To which the ogress replied, 'In an evil hour, O Buthli's daughter, in an evil hour wert thou brought to birth. The sons of Giuki thou gavest to slaughter, their noble dwellings thou raised to earth.
And Brynhild did reply. A true account, if thou carest to hearken, O lying soul, will I tell to thee, how empty of love, and o'ershadowed by falsehood, the life of the Geukings had destined for me. Atli's daughter was I, yet the monarch bold-hearted signed me a home neath the shade of the oak. But 12 summers old, if thou carest to hearken, was this maid when her vows to the hero she spoke. Hjalm Gunnar the old of the Gothic nation, great chief on the pathway to hell, did I speed, and victory granted to Auth's young brother. Then Odin's dread fury was roused at my deed. Then a phalanx of bucklers did Odin set around me on Skatalund's heights, shields crimson and white. Bade only that the prince break the slumber that bound me, who knew not of terror, nor shrank from the fight. In flames high towering and fiercely raging, round my southern hall did he set in a ring. None other was destined to pass through in safety, save the hero, who treasure of Fafnir should bring. The generous hero with treasure gleaming, the Danish Viking on Grani rode, foremost champion in deeds of valour, where my foster father had his abode. As brother with sister we slept together, 8 nights' space he lay by my side. There we were happy and slumbered idly, nor loving caresses did ever betide. Yet Guthrun, the daughter of Giuki, reviled me, that I in the arms of her lover had slept. Then was I aware of the thing I desired not, the truth of my marriage from me thee had kept. All too long against the storms of adversity struggling, both women and men seek their fortunes to right. But I with my Sigurd shall end my life's battle, at last. Now depart from me, daughter of night. With those words, said Gest, the ogress gave a horrible shriek and leapt into the cliff. Then the king's followers cried, tell us more. But the king said, you need not tell us any more about things of that kind.
Then he continued,
were you ever with the sons of Lothbrok?
Gest replied,
I was only with them for a short time. I joined them when they were making an expedition to the south near the Alps, and when they destroyed Vifilsborg. Panic spread everywhere at their approach, for they were victorious wherever they went. They were intending at the time to go to Rome. It chanced one day that a certain man came up to King Bjorn Ironside and saluted him. The king received him in a friendly way and asked him whence he came. He said that he had come from the south, from Rome. King Bjorn Ironside then asked him, how long is the journey there? The man replied, you can see here, O king, the shoes which I am wearing. Then he took iron-bound shoes from his feet, the tops of which were very thick, but underneath they were all worn. You can see now how severely my shoes have suffered, said the man. And tell what a long way it is from here to Rome. It must be a very long way, said Bjorn Ironside. I shall turn back and give up the idea of attacking the territories of Rome. And the result was that they went no further on their way, and everyone thought it extraordinary that they should change their minds so suddenly at the word of one man, when all their plans had been laid. So after this the sons of Lothbrok went back to their homes in the north, and made no further raids in the south.
King Olaf said,
it is clear that the saints in Rome would not allow them to make their way there. The man you spoke of must have been a spirit sent from God to make them change their minds so quickly so as not to bring destruction on Rome, the most holy place of Jesus Christ.
The king then posed a question to Gest.
Among the kings whom you have visited, whose court did you like the best?
Gest replied,
I enjoyed most being with Sigurd and the sons of Giuki. But the sons of Lothbrok were those who allowed most freedom to their followers to live as they liked. Then again, the richest place was that of Eric at Uppsala. But King Harald the Fair-haired, he was more exacting than any of the kings I have mentioned in the duties that he imposed on his followers. I was with King Hlothfair too in the land of the Saxons, and there I was prime-signed or marked with the sign of the cross, for it was not possible to remain with him otherwise, because the Christian religion was carefully observed there. That was the place I liked best on the whole.
The king replied,
"You give us a great deal of information, whatever the question we ask."
The king then posed many more questions to Guest, and Guest told him everything clearly, and finally he said,
"Now I must tell you why I am called Norna Guest. I was brought up at my father's home at a place called Groning. My father was a wealthy man, and kept his house in great style. At that time, wise women used to go about the country. They were called spaewives, and they foretold people's futures. For this reason, people used to invite them to their houses, give them hospitality, and bestowed gifts upon them at parting. My father did the same, and they came to him with a great following to foretell my fate. I was lying in my cradle when the time came for them to prophesy about me, and two candles were burning above me. Then they foretold that I should be a favourite of fortune, and a greater man than any of my kindred or forebears, greater even than the sons of the chief men in the land. And they said that all would come to pass just as it has done. But the youngest Norn thought that she was not receiving enough attention compared with the other two, since they were held in high account, yet did not consult her about these prophecies. There was also a great crowd of roughs present, who pushed her off her seat so that she fell onto the ground. She was much vexed at this, and called out loudly and angrily, telling them to stop foretelling such good things about me. She said, "For I ordain that that boy shall live no longer than that candle burns, which is a light beside him." Then the eldest Norn took the candle and extinguished it, and bade my mother to take charge of it, and not light it until the last day of my life. After that, the spaewives went away. My father gave them good gifts at parting. When I was full grown, my mother gave me the candle to take charge of. I have it with me now."
The king said,
"Why have you come here to me now?"
Guest replied,
"The idea that came into my mind was this. I expected I should get good luck from you, because I have heard you highly praised by good and wise men."
The king then said,
"Will you receive holy baptism?"
Guest replied,
"I will, since you advise it."
So it came to pass, and the king took him into his favour and made him one of his retinue. Guest became a good Christian, and loyally followed the king's rules of life. He was also well-liked with everyone. It happened one day that the king said to Guest,
"How much longer would you live if you could choose?"
Guest replied,
"Only a short time, please God."
The king said,
"What will happen if you take your candle now?"
Thereupon Guest took his candle out of the frame of his harp. The king ordered it to be lit, and this was done. And when the candle was aflame, it soon began to burn away. The king then said to Guest,
"How old are you?"
And Guest replied,
"I am now 300 years old." "You are an old man," observed the king.
Guest then laid himself down and asked to be anointed with oil. The king ordered it to be done, and when it was finished, there was very little of the candle left unburnt. It then became clear that Guest was drawing near to his end, and his spirit passed just as the torch flickered out, and all who were present marveled at his passing. The king also set great store by his stories, and held that the account which he had given of his life was perfectly true. As always, feel free to get in touch on email mlegendlore@gmail.com, over on Twitter @loremyth, or Facebook and even the YouTube channel. Keep safe. Take care for now. I'm Siobhan Clark, and you've been listening to the Myth, Legend and Lore podcast.